So the point, and this is where what we're trying to achieve, the point is to ensure that tech is actually beneficial for humans and that tech creates an environment, or rather that we create a tech environment where our fundamental rights are actually respected.
Welcome to the Legal Creatives Podcast, where we'll be bringing you the greatest and the most inspirational concepts and projects and discuss some of the most powerful ideas for the transformation of the legal industry. This podcast is brought to you by Legal Creatives, the school for the transformation of legal services. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Legal Creatives Podcast. Today, I am with an incredible guest. She's got a ton of experience in legal innovation. She's running the legal design innovation consultancy agency called Amurabi, based in Paris, France. She works with clients worldwide. And her latest amazing initiative and platform is called Fair Patterns. So today, we're going to talk with Marie-Potel Saville on the podcast to learn more about fair patterns, dark patterns. How can we move from dark to fair, from dark to light? And so that we're going to talk on the podcast. So thank you so much, Marie, for being here today on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Tessa, for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. So would you like to say a little bit more about you, maybe a little bit about your background and what you do as a way to get started? That would be awesome.
Sure. So basically, I've been an entrepreneur for the past 6 years now. Time flies, right? Prior to that, I was a private practice lawyer for about 12 years. Then I became a GC, so working in-house. And so I created my own legal design innovation studio, Amurabi, back in 2018 already. And basically, what we do at Amurabi is that we try to bridge the gap between the law and its users. It's the mission we've set ourselves because, you know, as a lawyer, I really thought that it was too sad that legal content, contracts, legal processes would create so many constraints that they would end up not being read, not being applied, you know, just being put on a database or a cupboard, whatever, but really not being part of business life or even society at large. And when you think about the ultimate purpose of law, it's precisely to, you know, help us live together and therefore, you know, create a livable society. So this is how Amurabi started. It's been a very successful initiative ever since. And we are absolutely blessed with amazing clients all around the world, which is really great. But that also got us thinking about our more systemic impact, because running projects is fantastic. But in a way, it's also a limit to our impact, because we only have an impact, you know, through the clients we work with. And we're wondering how we could have a more scalable, more systemic impact, a bit like, you know, what Margaret Hagans said at the Legal Design Summit, like, how do we reach that systemic impact? And that got us to create our R&D lab in 2022, which actually led us to create Fair Patterns. And I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, that's exactly the topic for today's discussion, Fair Patterns. But what an amazing journey. Super inspiring to, you know, to witness the evolution. We've known each other for years. We've even briefly met in person. That was very brief.
That was in an airport, right?
That was in an airport.
I remember
yeah.
that.
That was funny. I think I lost my sunglasses after that. And I don't know, delighted. And then I just forgot them somewhere in the airport. But yeah, it was it's just an incredible journey. So now you came up with the idea of Fair Patterns to scale your impact. I love that, because I'm all about also, you know, trying to find ways to scale the impact we have. And I think this is such a smart move, especially given a mass, you know, there's a mass online manipulation going on. You know, whenever we navigate the internet, and you know, we are asked to accept terms of use of we never really read, and we create accounts on platforms. Sometimes, you know, we are invited to have a free trial, and then, you know, sometimes like, how do I cancel? How do I stop this? You know. And I mean, there's a lot more. So that's what we want to talk about. And since you have this expertise in the topic, I would like to start maybe by putting this in context. What are those dark patterns online? Why is it a problem? And sure. And why it's important to solve it or to take this into account?
So what are dark patterns? Well, basically, it's pretty much everything you see online, unfortunately, because they're everywhere. And I think anyone could relate to that experience. You might not know that it's called a dark pattern, but for sure you've experienced it tons of times, because basically a dark pattern is an interface that tricks you, that deceives you, that manipulates you into doing something either without realizing or even against your own interests. So if we take some very concrete examples, you know, the very basic dark pattern, I guess, is the accept all button on a cookie banner, where there is no equivalent button to reject all. It might take several clicks to actually reject all cookies. And that plays on a very important cognitive bias, which we all have, that we can't, you know, escape from, which is the salience bias. And basically, it means that if we see something that's more salient, which means, you know, it's shinier, it's bigger, the color is more appealing, then we're, you know, inevitably drawn to clicking on that button. That's just, you know, a by default human reaction. And that's just a very basic example. But you talked about subscription. And that's sadly another very, very common dark pattern. The FTC in the US is calling them subscription traps, but whatever the term really, basically it's all these, you know, supposedly free trials, free delivery, free anything, you know, to get you into clicking without reading the fine print. And there are even cases where the fine print is not there at all. And you end up caught in what is not a one-time purchase. So first, it's not free. It's something that you actually buy. And second, it's not a one-off as you thought. It's actually a recurring subscription. And if you try to cancel, you know, it was super easy to get in that subscription, one click. And then, for example, if we take Amazon Prime, which the FTC is actually suing, then it takes at least 7 clicks to unsubscribe. And it's not just the number of clicks. It's also the fact that at each of these clicks, you are either lured into keeping your subscription. So first, you know, they try to seduce you and then they try to scare you. Like, you're going to lose, think about everything you can't have anymore, playing on our FOMO, obviously, tons of, you know, additional cognitive biases. And one of them is the fear of losing something. So if you have something and something and someone tells you that you're going to lose it, inevitably, you want to retain it, even if you don't use it that much. It's just, again, human reaction. So subscription traps are also another example. And it's also all the interfaces that trick you into sharing more personal data than you would if you really understood what is happening. Typically, it's all these apps or social networks that, you know, try to encourage you to, for example, share your geolocation to find your friends, when actually what happens is that it's not just your friends that's going to find you. It's basically all the data brokers in the planet, and that's a lot of people. Does that make sense at all, Tessa?
Oh, it does make sense. It's just so interesting. And I'm very curious to know, there's actually two things I'm thinking right now. There's the legal aspect, the fairness, the ethic, but there's also the business, the marketing, the sales.
Absolutely.
Is there a conflict there? Because I would imagine, if, you know, putting myself in the shoe of a marketer, the objective is to, you know, get people to create the accounts, and eventually
yes,
turn into customers. But from the legal perspective and the ethics, it's another framework. It's another way to look at the problem or look at the situation. How do we reconcile both?
Absolutely, we can and we should. First of all, it's totally possible to do marketing in a way that respects user. If you take the example of, you know, offline marketing, you know when you're seeing an advertising campaign, right? You identify it as an ad. Whether, you know, it's something on the street, whether it's something that you read in a newspaper, whether it's a sign in a shop, okay? It's clearly labeled as such. And because you identify it as a marketing campaign or some advertisement or even, you know, an advertisement video, because you identify it as such, you as an adult, you know, you have the necessary distance to say, okay, they're trying to sell me that. Well, I still, you know, can freely decide whether I like that product or not, whether it fits my needs or not. And that's perfectly fine. Again, we're absolutely not fighting against marketing per se. We're fighting against something that's very different from marketing, which is manipulation, which is deception. And that is, one, totally illicit, right? And that has been illicit for almost forever, you know? For example, Section 5 of the FTC Act, which is the legal basis that the FTC is using to sue Amazon, that they've used against Epic Games for Fortnite, etc., it dates back to 1914. So, you know, the idea that humans have a right to, you know, agency, autonomy, freedom, as that therefore it is illicit to manipulate them, it's an absolute given. You know, there's nothing new about it. And that's why, you know, it's interesting, your question, because actually it shows how much we accept online things that we would never, ever accept offline. You know, this manipulation, this deception. Imagine a shop. You enter into the shop, and as soon as you go through the door, there's a sales guy jumping on you, putting a tracker on your jacket, and that tracking device is actually going to follow you around all the store, knowing exactly which product you look at, which product you can perhaps, you know, which product you take, which product you buy, which you take back, and then following you when you get out of that shop into all the other shops that you're going to go to for weeks. It sounds crazy when I say it like this, right? You would never accept it in real life. And yet that's exactly what happens when you blindly click accept all cookies, meaning that you are immediately tracked, okay? And that several companies, usually dozens, if not hundreds of companies, know exactly what you look at on this site, but also which sites you visit after this one. I mean, this is what a cookie does, okay? Yes. So, you know, this is an interesting comparison, right? Because you would never, ever accept it.
Crazy. No, we would never accept that. Absolutely. So I guess because it's online and maybe because we don't understand the technology, how it works, because we don't really see it, right? We would see if they put a tracker on us or if we had the sale man or woman following us everywhere, we would see that, right? It would be annoying. You know?
Exactly. But which is why, you know, awareness is absolutely key. And that's also part of what we're doing. We're really trying to raise awareness on all these techniques, all these manipulative and deceptive techniques, which really are not doomed to go with the digital world. It's also, you know, one of our key messages. We fully embrace the digital world. We absolutely love all the benefits that tech can bring to us as humans. And basically, our message is that we don't have to give up our fundamental rights to freedom, to privacy, just because, you know, we like to buy stuff online or to watch videos online. digital is not doomed to be manipulative or deceptive. It can totally be respectful of your fundamental rights. It's just that there's a need for change, and that moment is now. Coming to your point about, you know, regulation, and basically, even if dark patterns have been actually, you know, indirectly prohibited for decades, what we're seeing now, and that's great, is specific new prohibitions dedicated to dark patterns as such. So it's not just that it's a form of manipulation, it's stated in legislative acts. For example, the Digital Services Act expressly prohibits dark patterns. The AI Act does the same. The FTC produced a staff report that names dark patterns, and that's really what's changing. But again, there's no conflict between business and the legal framework. I think the conflict is more in terms of, you know, what we blindly accept without realizing, and that needs change, deep change.
And so, yeah, totally agree. And so let's talk about the fair patterns. We've talked about dark patterns and all the problems we see online. So how do we solve these problems? Did you find a set of principles or guidelines or frameworks that you came up with through your R&D that you can share with the audience? So at least we can have some cues as to how we how we can make that shift, this shift.
Of course, so it took us 2 years of R&D, so it can seem like a long time, but actually, you know, we have the pleasure of working with Harry Brignall, who actually coined the term dark pattern and has been leading research and the fight against dark patterns ever since 2010. And so our 2 years seem actually a short time compared to his work. But yes, all our R&D work enabled us to create the concept of fair pattern. So what is a fair pattern? It's basically an interface that empowers you to make free and informed choices. And that comes with a number of guidelines, as you said. You know, so we've got a full list of criteria of how to create that those fair patterns. And it's a combination of neurosciences, UX design, legal principles, all of which, you know, they're put all together, so that basically, we acknowledge our limitations as humans. You know, it's a bit of a fake idea that we could, you know, resist manipulation online. Actually, we can't. So it's also important to be aware of our weaknesses as humans when we're online. You know, we're all a bit vulnerable online in a way. And therefore, a fair pattern is also, you know, an interface that tries to reduce your cognitive load, you know, not overload you with information, perhaps give you some time to think, because everything is so fast, and that actually turns against you most of the time. Let's say you're trying to buy a flight ticket. We've all, you know, clicked too quickly and paid too much than what we wanted. So that's really the idea behind fair patterns. It's like we re-equipping humans with the ability to make choices that are based on their own preferences. We're not preaching. We're not telling you, Tessa, you should reject all cookies. If your preference is that you like to have, you know, new offers based on, you know, some purchases that you made previously, fine. So the idea is not to nudge people into privacy-friendly or consumer-friendly options. It's really to give them the freedom, but you have the freedom. For example, you need to have two equal buttons. If one button for one action is more salient than the other, actually you don't have that freedom, because inevitably you will be drawn to, you know, the more salient one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes so much sense. And I think what you've mentioned about human behavior online being a little bit more passive in a way that, or tolerant than what we would tolerate in real life. I think it's also related to how all the interfaces are designed. When, you know,
yeah,
you may know this book is called Hook. I don't remember.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all those social media design that was created to hook us as consumers.
Yes.
So we're looking for the notification, the little red circle that says you've got a new message, you've got a new like, you've got a new comment. And I think I don't know if it's an extension of that or if I'm not sure, but I see it very much related. So it's playing with our brain and I think there's lots of neuroscience in there as well. So that's good.
Absolutely.
We can fix it.
Yeah, we can, because basically what you're describing is the choice architecture online. You know, it's the fact that contrary to real life, if you're on a street, you've got several other streets and you can decide where to go freely. Okay. Online is a bit different. Let's say you're on a site. Well, you can be, you know, pushed to one direction versus the other. Okay. So this is a choice architecture. That's inevitable. You know, the existence of a choice architecture is totally inevitable. But there are a growing number of regulators and designers and businesses which realize that this choice architecture has to be fair. It has to respect our own preferences if we want to live in a sustainable digital world where actually we're not the objects, we are not the one being consumed, but we, you know, humans can strive. Then we need a choice architecture which is fair, which means that it respects the preferences of the users.
Just a quick break to provide even more value so you can make the most out of this episode on the topic of fighting dark patterns. Because this topic is not an easy one, and there's actually a lot more resources that Marie Potel Saville has put together that you can benefit from. The first of which is the podcast. Yes, Marie Potel Saville is also running a podcast, and it's called Fighting Dark Patterns by Amurabi. You've got a ton of amazing episodes with UX designers and researchers and other experts and thought leaders. I highly recommend you follow the podcast and listen to some of the episodes. The second thing you can do is visit fairpatterns.com. You can find more information about all the amazing work that Marie Potel Saville is doing. And also visit the e-learning section. We're going to talk more about the trainings and the e-learning program Marie Potel Saville has put together later in this episode, so I encourage you to keep on listening. And the third thing you can do is, because at Legal Critics, we do a lot of those interviews with amazing professionals who work at the intersection of design and the law. And for you to stay up to date, there is no better way but to subscribe to our newsletter at legalcreatives.com/newsletter. You're going to be up to date with the interviews that we do and the articles that we write, and also the course opening if you would like to upskill in the field. And this is it. Now we're going to go back to the interview. We've got a lot more ground to cover, some case studies, success stories, trainings, e-learning, and how AI is not just part of the problem, but also part of the solution. And this is coming up in the next segment with Marie Potel Saville from Amurabi and Fair Patterns. Let's talk about some real cases. You have a fantastic initiative with Fair Patterns, which is called the Fair Mondays on LinkedIn. Every Monday I see it. I see the post. I love it. It's always giving good inspiration. You post all kinds of really interesting cues to show the difference between dark and fair patterns. You also mentioned some cases of things happening around the world. Would you like to maybe pick one or two?
Sure.
Whatever you believe would be relevant for the audience to understand the risk associated to not fixing the dark patterns. And that would be great.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So this is really what Fair Monday is about, is to raise awareness and to you know, share as much as possible the good, the bad, and the ugly, let's call it this way. And so, for example, very recently, the European Commission fined Apple for over 1.8 billion euros. That was for an abuse of its dominant position on the market for the distribution of music streaming apps to iOS users through the App Store. So we all know the App Store. And by the way, we all love Apple products, right? It's just that Apple has this tendency, which in this case is abusive, to be willing, you know, to enshrine users in its own environment, the Apple environment, and exclude other providers. And that's exactly what was sanctioned by the European Commission. And it was the fact that basically the App Store restricted app developers from informing iOS users about alternative and sometimes cheaper music subscription services. So that's not exactly a dark pattern, by the way, but we thought that it was important to talk about this case because it's also to show that there's a strong trend that is actually way bigger than just the dark patterns issue, which is a strong legislative and enforcement push towards fairness and transparency. And basically our message is, you know, you can't get away with it much longer. And what's going to happen is that either the regulators are coming for you, or and perhaps it's an end, users, your own consumers, are also going to turn against you. And actually, there's also another example of that with Starbucks. We probably all love Starbucks as well, right? They've got this electronic wallet service so that you can pay with this wallet when you go to a Starbucks. It's just that the way you refill your wallet has a minimum amount. And so basically, you know, you want your, I don't know, $4 latte or matcha or whatever. So instead of paying with your card or whatever, you use your Starbucks wallet, but there's the minimum amount of transaction, which is $25. And basically, that's how, you know, you top up your coffee app through your wallet credit. And basically what happens is that you don't necessarily realize that this amount has been topped up. And this resulted in, well, hundreds or dozens of millions being overspent by people. And that actually, you know, got Starbucks into heavy trouble because they're almost becoming a financial institution because of that, which I'm not sure they had foreseen. And in any event, you know, it's deceptive because you don't know what's happening and you don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all of that, all of those, the could we say they are design decisions? Like it's a design decision to
yes.
To have users top up, you know, $25 plus. It's a design decision for Apple.
Of course.
To have all the users within that Apple ecosystem and reject the other apps, right? It's all of those are design decisions too, right?
Of course, it's design decisions. Absolutely. And what's really interesting is that, as I was explaining, users are beginning to turn against this. What's very interesting to witness is, you know, users are getting really tired of all these push, you know, all these tricks, to the point that we're seeing a sheer economic effect on the business itself because they're using too much dark patterns. You know, it used to be profitable to implement dark patterns, that's for sure, at least on the very short term, but less and less so because users are becoming more savvy. But also, they're really, really fed up. And we're working a lot with economists to show, to really compare, you know, even from a sheer cynical point of view. Let's say you don't care about ethics, right? Let's say you just want to have a successful business. I mean, why not? And we're working with Oxera in particular to show that dark patterns are actually less profitable over a 6 month period of time and up to 12 months and further on than fair patterns. So basically what happens with a dark pattern is that you've got a very short turnover boost, but that only lasts 1, 2, maybe 3 months maximum. But then people realize they've been tricked. You know, they see that on their bank slip, or they see all the effect of the cookies that they've accepted because they're bombarded with offers. So they notice, and then they're really furious, and they basically it increases your churn. And compared to a fair pattern, which will give you much more sustainable clients because they will be more loyal to your brand. So that you will have a longer customer lifetime value, and therefore you're actually increasing the value of your brand and the value of your company.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. It's so interesting. And I can definitely relate as a consumer and also as a business owner. Like, I just made a subscription for something that is free for 30 days. I cannot find how to cancel within the 30 days. I have to reach out to customer support, and I'm pretty sure they will answer because I think this is a good company. But sometimes maybe the digital platforms, they're not ready for that, or maybe, you know, we use all kinds of apps in behind to make the platform work because there's not only just one platform that does it all. And then maybe those apps, they don't talk to each other. So as a consumer, I think that this we are lost in, you know, this internet maze, and we don't know how to navigate it. And also as business owner, we used to have like a membership and we just stopped doing it because in the end we realized it was not so clear for people that it was like a recurring payment. And then when people want to cancel, they lose access to the stuff on the platform and they don't like it. So we're like, we just changed the model and we find it
interesting.
Yeah, we find it so much better for everybody. So much better for us, so much better for the customer as well. And so I think this is a very interesting data you've just shared, that maybe in the short run, if you use DAG pattern, you win, but then you have to win a lot more customers to make up for all the customers who actually left and are not going to give good reviews, right?
And it's a losing game. And we see that very clearly. And for example, there's a scientific study clearly showing that auto-cancel subscriptions, so the ones that, you know, just stop at the end of the agreed period and then you have to consciously renew them, so those auto-cancel subscriptions are actually more profitable than the auto-renewal ones. Interesting, right?
Wow,
because
really
you thought, yeah, people would forget and etc. But if your product is good enough, you know. And this is exactly what we're talking about. Let's not forget that, you know, the whole idea behind market economy is that it's supposed to be the most beneficial model that we know to date for consumers, because it gets consumers more choice, better product, more innovation. You know, it's the whole thinking behind that model. And that's exactly why the OECD said very clearly in its report on dark patterns in 2022 that if we let dark patterns rule the web, you know, if we let them plague the digital world, then we might end up damaging the very model of market economy, simply because it will no longer produce these, you know, best benefits for consumers. We will end up losing because, you know, lesser quality goods, less innovation, less competition, and higher prices, of course.
So we've talked a lot about the dark pattern examples, those cookie buttons and other things. We've talked also about some principles for fair patterns. We've talked about case studies. I would like to also mention that with your company, with Fair Patterns and with Amurabi, you do a lot of things. Maybe you want to say like briefly, what are some or all of the things you do? I know you do education, you do consultancy. Maybe you want to share a little bit about that.
Of course. Yeah, sure. So it's true that we're very, very active, and we're also, you know, blessed with amazing clients that also challenge us, you know, into doing new super innovative projects, which we absolutely love. And that led us to do a very wide variety of projects. For example, you know, litigation design. This is something that we're super active in across the whole of Europe and the UK. That's super, super interesting. Of course, privacy design, we do that tremendously. Designing legal information for minors is also a key priority for us. Just for the record, 1/3 of all internet users are under 18. And they're not just, you know, 16 or 17. We're talking 8 years old, 10 years old, on their own online. So clearly, you know, designing their privacy, designing legal information for minors is just absolutely indispensable. And we're super active in that respect. If I can maybe give an example of a fairly, you know, emblematic project, it's the King privacy saga. Basically, King came to us with, you know, the challenge of redesigning their privacy policy in a way that would match the amazing user experience that they provide their clients, you know, the gamers, when they play, whether it's Candy Crush or any other of King's game. And of course, you know, our designers got super excited because the assets of the video games are so amazing. And we were actually authorized to use these assets to create the privacy saga. And so we did that. We actually tried to mirror the experience that gamers have when they play, for example, Candy Crush. And that's how we created the Privacy Saga, which is actually a series of steps that you go through. It's a privacy notice. And so it's like, this is the personal data that we collect. This is what we do with the data, and so on and so forth. Except it's a bit like a video game. You go from one step to the other. You get rewards if you have learned enough, you know, from step one, you go to step two. There's a quiz in the end, and that got us, I guess, some international recognition, which is really nice to have.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I love this project. I think you've got so many, like an amazing track record of outstanding projects. I think you got many prizes as well for those in privacy and other. You also offer this masterclass. I have seen this is a new masterclass for fair patents. Tell us more about that.
Sure. You know, it's in the spirit of you know, awareness raising, obviously, but also it comes from all our user research in pretty much all our projects for the past 6 years, where all the designers that we worked with in workshops, that we interviewed, etc., told us that, you know, most of the time, they don't want to create dark patterns. They have to because, you know, someone from the marketing team or their client, if they're a freelancer, their client tells them, I want this urgency countdown, or I want this and that. And they're lacking the arguments to push back on that request, and also the confidence that as designers, they can actually have a strong viewpoint, you know, put forward ethical design, and that they would be legitimate to do so, that not just there to execute. And unfortunately, it's not always the case. And so we are trying to equip designers, but also developers. The masterclass is also for marketers if they want to. And basically the idea is to, well, better understand the concept of dark patterns, because most designers would vaguely know what they are, except they've been so trained, you know, in creating them, that it might have become some sort of automatism. And of course, we equip them with the knowledge of creating fair patterns instead, and also have these, you know, perhaps difficult discussions, so that they have the right arguments, depending on, you know, which stakeholder they talk to push back on a request. And also, you know, the KPIs. I think this is probably the best argument ever. Like, you know, if a fair pattern is actually more profitable than a dark one, it closes the discussion. Why would you, you know, trick anyone?
Oh, that's so great. I love it. Do you see with the new technologies available? I mean, we have so many. I mean, we all know like ChatGPT and AI, but there's Web3, the metaverse, there's other technologies. Do you see what do you foresee that could be happening in the future with the new technologies and with the dark patterns?
The so-called new technologies are actually totally there, you know, so it's not something that will happen. It's happening. And what's happening is actually AI powered dark patterns for a very simple reason is because, you know, generative AI is obviously based on those large language models, which rely on a high volume of data to create whatever, you know, they are prompted to create. Given the super high prevalence of dark patterns, it's basically 97% of European sites, but it's 90% in Japan. You know, it's all over the place. It's the same in the US. So because, you know, because of this prevalence, mathematically, any Gen AI tool, which is not even prompted to create a dark pattern, maybe it's just prompted to create a purchasing funnel or a subscription funnel, even without specifying that you want it to create a dark pattern, mathematically, because of this, you know, super high number of dark patterns present currently, it will reproduce it. That's extremely likely, and that's already happening. And then on top of that, of course, you've got the people prompting it. For example, hyper-personalization. Imagine, you know, on dematerialized interfaces like, a VR headset. You know, so you're completely immersed in that virtual reality. Imagine a small voice, you know, whispering to your ear, oh, won't you look amazing in this new outfit? And pushing that and scaring you to reject that offer. You know, it's a bit like these buttons that say, oh, no, I don't want you to look my best, or, oh, no, I love wasting money. But imagine the power of that once you're completely immersed in virtual reality with a small voice, you know, whispering, and it's hyper personalized so that it knows what you've purchased before. And it's adjusted exactly to make you behave the way it wants to be. Unfortunately, it's not a Black Mirror episode. You know, it's it's true. It could very well happen. And anthropomorphism is also a form of AI dark pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And it's currently happening. So
yeah, no, those are very good points. Like, so if you want to create a piece of code using a Gen AI tool for those buttons, you could end up with a piece of code that will be by default, you know, with
exactly
a dark pattern, right? But that
exactly, which is why we need, you know, AI to find these dark patterns and to transform them, to fix them into fair patterns. And that's exactly what we're working on.
Wow, that's amazing. So looking ahead, what are some of key goals and aspirations you have for your team and fair patterns?
Well, I think ultimately what we're trying to do is to make sure that the digital world that we're all building, you know, it's not something that is happening to us. I think, you know, each of us has a role to play, either as a consumer, as a business owner, as a company, as a regulator. We collectively need to ensure that humans can thrive in the digital world. In other words, that there is a sustainable digital market economy where it's not just a couple of mega companies, you know, making a fortune. It's also us, all of us, taking those benefits because it's an amazing opportunity. In my own podcast, I was recently interviewing Cindy Cohen from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. She's absolutely amazing. You would love her, by the way. and she was sharing that, you know, as a very strong, you know, human rights advocate, civil liberties advocate for a long time, she's absolutely not saying that people should stay away from technology. That's not fair. You know, technology has all these amazing benefits that it can provide to all of us. So the point, and this is where what we're trying to achieve, the point is to ensure that tech is actually beneficial for humans, and that tech creates an environment, or rather that we create a tech environment where our fundamental rights are actually respected.
Wow, that's amazing. And yes, that's true. You've got this amazing podcast, Fighting Dark Patents, Hammurabi's podcast. I really encourage everyone to follow and to listen some of the episodes, all of them. I've listened to a few of them, and I think it's really amazing. I love it. So thank you for doing that as well. Before we go, any last words? Anything else you would like to add? Because we're already a little bit over time, I think. But maybe there's one last thing you want to say. Also, tell us what is the best way for people to contact you as well, please, Marie. That would be awesome.
Sure. So I think my key message is, you know, don't be afraid of change, embrace it, and it's all for the best. I can promise that. and you know, just more practically, I'm always available on LinkedIn. So just ping me. It's Marie Poutel-Saville on LinkedIn. Go to hammurabi.eu if you're interested in a project. Go to fairpatterns.com if you're wondering whether your interfaces might contain dark patterns. We've actually just created a user testing lab specifically dedicated to analyzing the degree of manipulation, the degree of deception on given interfaces. So it's a scientific verifiable method. So, you know, there will be some sort of evidence that anyone can use. That's really super, super exciting. So let's regain our free will online.
Well, that's an amazing way to conclude this interview. Thank you so much, Mary, for coming to the show. Really enjoyed this episode. Really enjoyed this interview. All great insights and amazing, amazing research put into practice. So yeah, that's congratulations.
Thanks a lot, Tessa.
Wow, what an amazing episode on the topic of fighting dark patterns. Did you like this episode? Yes? Let us know about it. I want to hear from you. I want to get your feedback. I want to make sure that we can also address all of the questions that you have, all of the topics that you want to hear on the podcast, and make sure we can receive your suggestions. You know, I'm doing this because I'm so passionate about bringing together amazing professionals working in this space and doing so, building a little community around it. So if you would like to leave us your feedback, make a suggestion, ask a question, all you need to do is go to legalcreatives.com/QA. Q for questions, A for answer. That's it. legalcreatives.com/QA. Send us a little text or record a voice note or even a little video, and I'll make sure to reply back. Your support means a lot. Thank you so much once again for tuning in today, for listening or watching to this podcast, and I look forward to seeing you in one of the next episodes and receiving a little note. So thank you so much. Have a great day. Until the next episode, stay creative.